Hello, everybody from the nation's capital. Welcome to an episode of the Politidine Podcast. My name is Damian Galvin, and today I'm very excited. We have a very special guest, Gil Cisneros, served as Undersecretary for Personnel and Readiness under the Biden administration. He's formerly the representative for California's 39th district and is currently running for the 31st district in California. How are you, Mr. Cisneros?
I'm doing good. And just one correction, it was the Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel,
Personnel and Readiness. There you go. And we find ourselves filming this episode here in the Cisneros Institute at George Washington University. How does that feel for you, just being able to say that?
You know, it was a dream, and it was really a project that I developed when I was at grad school. The idea of really kind of helping and supporting students that I felt needed that support, the support that I didn't really get when I was an undergrad here at GW. And so I'm just glad to see that it's thriving.
Could you just speak a little bit closer to the microphone? Perfect. You're good.
I'm just glad to see that it's thriving, and there's so many students now that have gone through this, and so many current students that we have now that are in scholarship, and it continues to grow. And I know that makes myself and my wife really excited.
Yeah, I can imagine that it's an awesome feeling. Now, one of the questions that I had prepared for you was these only at GW moments. Mm-hmm. So at George Washington University, we have this thing called an hashtag only at GW moment. And I wanted to get first one of your positive only at GW moments, and then something that you can say was maybe a little bit more negative, shaped you in some type of way, but something that you grew from.
Yeah, I think just the location, right? I was a political science major, and just the idea that, you know, being able to go to the Capitol, to, you know, go into the gallery of either the House or the Senate and kind of watch that and really kind of, you know, take this class. I remember taking a class on Congress, right? And then going to the actual Congress and kind of seeing it, like, you know, it's not actually what you think it is, right? You know, it's not a bunch of, you know, people inside the chamber, you know, arguing and debating all the time. It really, a lot of the work kind of happens behind the scenes. Yeah. In the committees. And that was the real experience. But I will tell you, one of the cool things that I used to like to do that I think is only a GW moment was, you know, being so close, you know, to the mall, just walking down 23rd Street, walking to the Lincoln Memorial, or you'd go on that run, you know, by the reflecting pool, you know, by the Vietnam Memorial, down to the Washington Monument. And that only happens here.
Yeah. What would you say? Because I do that walk all the time. I think that that's something that every GW student does. What was one of your like lesser known spots? Because I feel like every student, they have this place that they either like walking to, whether it be like a coffee shop, whether it be someplace in Georgetown, whether it be even like a spot on the mall that a lot of people don't know about. Did you have one of these locations?
You know, you'd go and you'd go for a run, and there would be these spots. There's so many, you know, sculptures and pieces of artwork that are out there. Mm-hmm. One of the cool ones is like there's this over by the tidal basin, this. It was like a man kind of coming out of the ground where it's like his head and his hand were like popping out. And then there was this kind of like hidden sculpture of Einstein that was kind of
almost
like abstract or whatever.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. And then just all these different, like you'd see the statue of Simon Bolivar, you know, just, you would walk around and you're like, oh, who is that? Right. And you just look at these different statues and it was like, oh, okay. That's this Civil War hero, or that's this, you know, individual that, you know, like you think Bolivar, why is he here, right? But he's was a big champion of revolution down there in South America. And so that kind of became, you know, fighting for independence from Spain.
Yeah.
It just kind of like a similar thing. So like, hey, let's make a statue to him. So it is kind of unique to kind of see these different, you know, pieces of work, art sculptures out there, and just kind of, you know, you run into them sometime. And then you even, I mean, even still, like a few years ago, I never even really kind of knew, but it was like on the South Side, there's a statue of Lincoln that was actually kind of controversial, but I had never run into it before until like years later.
Yeah.
And it was like, wow, that's the one they're talking about now in the news now.
Do you remember why it was controversial?
Well, it was during the, you know, Black Lives Matter movement, and there They did it not so long after his death, and really it was him and then Lincoln standing up and then a slave kind of bowing down in front of him.
Gotcha.
Or I should say a former slave bowing down in front of him. But, you know, that it was controversial at the time when they created it, and it was, you know, still, I guess, controversial today. And so I remember seeing it. They had fences around it, and police were kind of guarding it. And so, but I never knew that was here all this time when I was here when I was a student. And I ran into it like years later when I was in Congress.
Yeah, that's one of those things that I figured out in D.C. There's two things. One, I felt like this, I don't know, almost this awe being in the nation's capital, the sentiment that you, I get goosebumps still every time that I go into the Lincoln Memorial. And then the other thing is there's so many things that you just find. It seems like you could never stop exploring, and there's always different things to do. And I'm curious, is that sentiment always felt? You always feel like, you know, excited when you get to come to the Capitol, or, you know, on the contrary, do you feel nervous? Are there different sentiments that you now associate with it that were different from your first time coming here as a student?
You know, there's so much here, right? And I don't think I ever really got, I know I didn't see it all as a student. And then the thing now that I worry about is, well, I shouldn't say worry about, but I think now that I've kind of lived here, you know, I lived here when I was in Congress, I lived here when I was Undersecretary of Defense. So I kind of got into that, the mode of being like, it was like I was a resident here, I lived here. The exploring kind of stopped. Gotcha. And there's still so much more to see around here that I know I haven't seen. And, you know, sometimes you just want to go, like, you wish you could find the time, like, hey, let's go do this or let's do that. And we've done that a couple of times with our kids where, you know, there was a old, it was actually one of the last battles around D.C., Fort Stevens, it occurred. And so there's still like a little, it's on the corner of a neighborhood. It's like in, I think it's Southeast D.C. somewhere. So we like drove out there one day. They still got like a little couple cannons out there. And
okay.
And there's a couple signs, but it was kind of cool to kind of go see. I took my boys out to Manassas one day to kind of go check out that battlefield as well. And so, you know, there's still so much to kind of see out here that, you know, once you kind of became a resident, it's like you just kind of stop for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But I wish we really did have the time to kind of go out and explore and to see everything that there is. I know I haven't seen everything.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I feel the same way, especially being a student here. You just feel like you never have time to go out and do things. But even the museums, everything that there is to do here, there's so many great opportunities. Now, pivoting to something a little bit different. In 2010, you won a Mega Millions in the state of California, correct? Can you walk me through kind of what that moment was for you? Did you play the lottery often, or was it just like on a whim, you went, bought a ticket, and then what happened from there?
You know, I would play every once in a while. It wasn't like a constantly, like, everyday thing or every week. That just kind of happened to be almost coincidence, right? I went into this, L&L Hawaiian Barbecue was the name of the restaurant or the food place. And it was like a Hawaiian barbecue takeout. And I just went in there, ordered my food, saw they had a lottery machine. And I said, oh, well, why don't you give me like 10 tickets as well. And it didn't even really think anything about it. You know, when I went home, just took it out of my pocket, put it on the dresser, and that was it.
Yeah.
And then I got a call from my wife, who was working in television news at the time.
Okay.
And was working the late shift.
Gotcha.
And I got a call from her about like 2:15. Hey, check your ticket. You know, where you got your dinner, somebody won the lottery there.
Oh, okay. So she kind of already had a feeling.
Well, she kind of like knew that was where I ate.
Okay.
She didn't know that I had bought a ticket. Gotcha. So she had called to say like, hey, did you buy a ticket there? Yeah. And I said, yeah, I did. He's like, check it, because somebody won there.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So that was about like, it was 2:15 a.m. in the morning.
Okay.
So
okay.
The end of the time. But it, you know, when you ask like what like went through my head, what happened, I always say it was about 10 seconds of excitement and then it was holy crap.
Yeah. yeah, because that's the other thing too that I always wonder, because you hear these stories of these individuals, you know, some people they love it, they go on to do great things as you're doing, philanthropy and take on different endeavors, complete life goals that they always wanted, and then other people are like, I don't know if that was the best thing necessarily, winning. How do you feel about it?
You know, it was a blessing, right? I think you know, it's hard to say like it doesn't change your life, but you know, I think we've stayed grounded. You know, a lot of friends that I have are still my friends before. still, golf with my cousins and, do those type of things that I was doing before. But, it's really given us the opportunity to kind of go out and really give back to the community and really make a difference. And that's why we, we have scholarships that we hand out back in, where we were living at the time, Pico Rivera, San Gabriel Valley area. That's why we, started the Cisneros Hispanic Leadership Institute, was really to kind of give back and really try and make a difference in the community and uplift those, uplift the community and uplift those individuals that wanted to do more and really wanted to, as I say, we're in kind of that same situation that I was in when I was like a high school junior or senior that knew they wanted to do something, knew they wanted to kind of go to school, but wasn't really sure how to do it or what the path was. And it really is a shame that a lot of that hasn't changed. You still have kids today that aren't getting the support that they need in order to find that path and really get the knowledge and the mentorship that they need in order to find that path.
Yeah. So is that why education has been so important to you, because of your personal experience with it?
Oh, I think everything that we've kind of tried to do is in a way has been a reflection of either something that I wish I could have done better or an experience that I've had. Education changed my life. Mm. It put my life in a totally different trajectory than a lot of people that I went to school with. And it really was, transformational, right? It really put my life on a different path than I could have ever imagined.
Yeah.
And so I know the impact that it has, the difference that it can make in life, and really the likelihood that, one person in your family goes to college and the rest are going to go to college. Yes. Your children are going to go to college. And it really changes a family.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so it is important to that, and that's why we've invested in that. That's why we tried to make a difference. And, one of the things we first started when we were saying was, we had this program, Generation First Degree, and we wanted to put a college degree in every household. And that's really something we've worked towards. And it's ambitious. And, I don't know if we're ever going to get there, but we do what we can to kind of go and make a difference and really kind of, help those individuals that may not know what they want to do and really kind of give them the opportunity to see what's out there and get out of there. And that's why I really like our high school program that we have too, that we run.
I'm glad that that's back.
The Caminos program.
Yeah.
Is to really get students, high school students out of their bubble, out of their safety net, and it lets them come here to GW to kind of see what it's like to live on a college campus, what it's like to be away from home. And it's also great for the parents too, because they can see that, hey, my kids are going to be okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I remember I didn't visit more than 2-3 college campuses. It's something that even like as a Hispanic student, you don't really even think to do. You see your friends taking, I remember my school gave us maybe 4 or 5 days our senior year to go and visit, junior year as well, to go and visit different colleges. I think I used maybe 2-3 in the 10 total that we had. So it's, even something as simple as that, just getting the opportunity to come and see what a college campus is like, because I know that family is obviously something very important to you, and being Hispanic, it's a worry for parents seeing, your kid leaving, being whatever distance, whether it be 20, 30 minutes or several hours in the case of a lot of students here. But on the same note, family, it has been extremely important to you. I want to start by asking, what has your union to Jackie meant? Because in her own right, she is an absolutely amazing individual. As I was researching for this interview, I realized all the incredible things that she's done. 2-time Emmy winner. What has that been like? How has her support system helped you accomplish what you want?
Oh, it's been wonderful. I think, like any family, right? You're going to support each other. And she's been a big supporter of mine going throughout this, really getting behind me. When I told her I wanted to run for Congress the first time, she was like, are you kidding me?
I was going to ask you about that. What's that like as well? The Congress,
there's always been like, really?
Yeah.
And then, once she's kind of got over the initial shock, she's always kind of been on board and supportive of it and everything from, running for Congress to, serving in the administration, the idea that, we moved our family out here to kind of be together while I was at the Pentagon. It was just, you know, what more could you ask, right? And so she's been wonderful. It's very supportive. You know, she's been very supportive of the Institute and really what we wanted to do and to try and accomplish here and to really try and make a difference and really, you know, work with students. And I know she's had lunch with them before. And, you know, she's done, you know, we've done similar things at USC, her alma mater, as yes. well. And she's been very involved with the students there and, you know, has lunch with them all the time and has tried to mentor them and work with them. And so, you know, she's very giving of her time and very supportive of, you know, the mission to really try and, again, right, uplift individuals and give them that support that, you know, they may not, and by no fault of their family,
yeah.
they just don't know. Or, you know, I remember my dad telling me, it's like, hey, I'm going to help you and support you. And he, you know,
yeah.
But he didn't know what to do.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah. No. I get that 100%. Yeah. My dad found himself in a similar situation. He was like, yeah, you know, I'll sell whatever so that you have to go to college. Mm-hmm. But like, he wasn't sure in the ways that he could actually help me. And it's little things really that you don't even take into consideration.
Right.
It's absolutely amazing that you've gotten the support system around you that allows you to support and uplift a lot of people, including a lot of students. What has the journey of fatherhood been like for you as well? Something I'm curious about.
Fatherhood?
Yeah. Well, how's that been like? Because your children are younger now.
Oh, no, they're young. Yeah, we're late bloomers here.
Yes.
I have 9-year-old twins. They're great. You know, they're wonderful. They say some of the craziest things.
Oh, yeah. I have a 9-year-old sister. I can relate to it.
But it is, you know, it's fun. It's been, you know, you try and like learn from, you know, your childhood and like, okay, I'm not going to do that or I'll do this. And you try and be better. And but it has been fun and kind of, you know, dealing with them. And look, they've been troopers too. I know it hasn't been easy for them. They would like me to be here all the time and be with them all the time. And, you know, you just can't do that, you know, because campaigning takes up a lot of your time and really having to go to this meeting or to go to this event and, you know, being in Congress, you know, can be long hours sometimes. And so you don't always get to tuck them in at night. But, you know, they've understand it and they know what I'm doing and they know it's about kind of giving back. And I think that's kind of what we're trying to teach them is that, you know, hey, we have a mission in life to serve and to really see how we can make a difference in other people's lives. And you know, they're learning that. Right. And so it is, it's exciting, but it can be taxing on them. And I think, you know, God love them too, right, for being so supportive and really kind of helping me out and supporting me and, you know, my commitment to serve.
Yeah, absolutely. And on the same topic of support, what was it like? What was their support like after 2020? How did you feel? Obviously, you win your election in 2018. Mm-hmm. In 2020, you lose to the same individual that you had run against in 2018. What was that like? What was the sentiment in the environment around you? What was your own personal sentiment? And how do you think that that's going to help you this time around now that you're running for the 39th district?
You know,
31st.
2020 was a tough year, right? The pandemic was going on. It was just hard to campaign. I think a lot of the polling was off. So, you know, people thought we were going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were trying to tell them it's closer than you think. But it's just, you know, we couldn't get out there and knock on doors like we wanted to. But, you know, you learn from it, right? You learn from those mistakes. And I think kind of going forward into this one, we're not going to allow that to happen again. You know, we're going to make sure we get out there. We're building our volunteer base. We are making sure that we're going to have people to go out and canvass. They're going to be able to knock on doors, to go talk to voters. And these were just things that was tough to do in 2020 because of the pandemic going on. You know, it's a live and learn, right? You learn from your mistakes. You learn what you could have done better. And, you know, we're not going to allow that to happen again.
Yeah, absolutely. And quick question on your time there in the 39th district. Last week I had on Ted Terry, who serves as DeKalb County Commissioner in the state of Georgia. And I asked him what his like proudest accomplishment or the thing that he was most excited to do during his time as DeKalb County Commissioner, which he still currently is serving at, but just the project that he's looking for. What was something that you were very proud to have done during your time as the representative for the 39th district?
Well, I always say, you know, the number one thing any member of Congress can do, right, is the constituent services.
Mm.
You know, you get members come, or I should say, constituents coming to you all the time with, you know, whether it be about they're having issues with the VA, or they're having issues with their Social Security or Medicaid or Medicare, and they need help and support,
mm.
or, you know, TSA, you know, lost my bag, or they damaged this, and how do I get reimbursed? And they're kind of dragging their feet on this. And these are all things, and they're just examples, but this is where a member of Congress can really is the direct tie to the federal government for that individual, can be help and support them and help them do these things and get these things done for them. And to me, that is always the most important thing that any member of Congress could do. And I'm proud that we really went above and beyond to make sure that happened. I was talking to an individual just a couple of weeks ago about, like, it's like, hey, yeah, you were my congressman, and you know, I'm in the insurance business, and really all the town halls that you did during this time, and really how you kind of fought to make this happen, and the PPP loans, you know, I was very appreciative of how you kind of went out there and did that, you know, for us, and stuck your neck out there to kind of, you know, fight for us and make sure that we took care of the small businesses. So, you know, doing those things are, I think, the most important thing. But I will tell you, too, I was kind of reflecting, just kind of like on my, you know, you think about it, right? It hasn't really been that long. It's only been about 5 years, right? Mm-hmm. So once I started running, you know, you go into office 2019, so really 4 years. Like, there's been kind of like three things, really, that I kind of think where I've kind of been transformation, or it's kind of changed things, right? I think, you know, when I was a freshman in Congress, I wrote an op-ed with some of my freshman colleagues that led to the impeachment of Donald Trump, and
yes,
what he was doing in Ukraine, or trying to do with Ukraine, and withholding funds from them and trying to get them to get involved in our election. And that op-ed is what, right after we wrote that op-ed, it kind of led to the impeachment. And you know, I think Speaker Pelosi was like, okay, now we can move forward with this.
Yeah.
One of the things, and this is another thing that I think is important that you can do, that not everything is tied to legislation when you're a member of Congress, but how you can sway things and make changes. You know, I'm a big baseball fan, and the MVP in baseball used to be called the Kennesaw Mountain Landis MVP, Most Valuable Player Award. Kennesaw Mountain Landis was a former judge who became the first commissioner of baseball, and he was a segregationist as well, right?
Okay,
he kept the game from being, integrated. Yeah. You know, Branch Rickey, you know, wouldn't dare kind of make that change or try and integrate the game with Jackie Robinson until he knew after Kennesaw Mountain Landis died.
There you go.
And then it became a thing right there. But they made that decision to put, after his death, to put his name on the MVP trophy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I felt like that's not the person that we want the MVP to be named after.
Sure.
So I let on a letter to really go out. I let on a letter that we sent to the Baseball Writers of America, that we sent to the Hall of Fame, that we sent to, like, Major League Baseball, asking them to rethink this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is not, this was not a good person. This was a person who kept, you know, Black players, African Americans out of the game. This is not who we want the MVP named after. And we got the whole Democratic baseball team to sign on to the letter.
There you go.
And year later, they took his name off the MVP trophy.
There you go.
And then the last thing really is kind of what's going on right now. I think, you know, Senator Tuberville is protesting and holding up all the nominations of the generals and admirals. That was a policy that I pushed forward, that I asked the Secretary of Defense that we need to take a look at. We should be able to pay, you know, if we have service members that are serving in an area where they can't get reproductive health care, you know, we should pay for them to be able to go get that because it's being denied them.
Yeah.
He was on board with it. You know, we made sure we could do it. We got it checked out. We got a legal opinion from the Department of Justice. They said yes, and one of the things they wrote in the legal opinion is, hey, we do it for prisoners. We should be able to do it for our service members.
Yeah.
And so we went forward with it, signed the policy, we issued it, I signed it. And that's kind of like, you know, what's going on right now. It's a shame. And I think, you know, what you, one of the things you saw with this happened with the voting in Ohio, yep. and here in, you know, we're just outside of Virginia, yeah. right now. But, you know, people want to support a woman's right to choose. They want to support reproductive health care. You keep seeing that, you know, every time it gets on the ballot.
Every time it wins. Yep.
So hopefully Senator Tuberville will get the message
yeah.
that, you know, he needs to lift his holds
yeah. Yeah.
And really kind of move forward because, you know, when they shot down Roe v. Wade in the Supreme Court with that Dobbs decision, it really was a step backwards. And we were at that time serving as the Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel Readiness. I was going to share that we would do what we could do to make sure that women would be able to get that if they so chose to make that decision in their life, that they would still be able to do that yeah. and supported any way that we could that was within the limits of the law.
Yeah.
And we were able to do that.
Yeah.
So I'm very happy that we were able to do
Absolutely.
That.
You read my mind. That was mm-hmm. exactly what I was going to ask you about. And, you know, Senator Tuberville is getting now backlash from his own party. Yesterday, he was apparently meeting with high-ranking Republican members talking about just exactly what his issue is and how exactly it can be resolved. And it seems like he's digging his heels in the sand, at least for the moment. But we'll see how successful that is. On the topic now of more policy-focused things, I wanted to ask you about your involvement with unions. Mm-hmm. Unions is something that's very close to the show here at Politatine. We have done a two-part special on it, on you know, the WGA strikes and the history of unionization here in this country. Several years ago, I made the prediction, and I continue to stand by the prediction that we find ourselves on the brink of a labor movement. And right now, genuinely, I do believe that come 20, 30 years in history, we will say that right now was the time that we found ourselves in this labor movement. What have unions meant for your campaign, and what is the importance of them in your perspective?
Well, look, I think, you know, my mom was in a union. My dad, when he started working, was in a union. You know, my uncles were members of unions. My brother. My cousins, you know, a lot of my relatives, friends, family, it has provided them with the means to go and live, you know, good, have a good job, right? A good career and making sure that they're not being taken advantage of by companies. And if you look, you know, through the history of our, well, you know, the labor movement rose, right? Because companies were asking too much of individuals, you know. Always want them to work longer hours for less money, you know, child labor. These were things that, you know, we needed a movement at that time to really kind of go out there and make sure that there were safe working conditions, that people weren't having to work like 16-hour days and you know, being docked their pay because they pissed off or made a manager mad. Yeah. You know, So it grew, right? And it's a shame that we've seen some of this over the, you know, you'd say over like the last 50 years or something, the unions have kind of started to die a little bit. They're really still involved, I think, in a lot of the government things. But we need to support unions. We need strong unions. Unions are the ones that have gone and really fought for workers in these right to work states. You know, or just taking advantage of these workers, right, that are going out there and really not, you know, it's not really a right to work. Mm. It is, you know, you want somebody who can bargain for you, that can work for you. It's going to fight for you to make sure that you're getting a fair wage. You know, why these companies are making billions of dollars and then they're, you know, giving you like a 5 cent, you know, hourly increase.
Yeah. Yeah,
it is not the way that things need to be done. And so I support, you know, I've always supported unions. I support their, you know, people's idea that to organize. I support the collective bargaining. And I think it is, they're the ones that are looking out for safety. They're the ones that are looking out for the consumer. I think we need to ensure that we keep doing that and making sure that we support unions. And I hope you're right in your prediction that we start to see these unions come back, that we start to see people organize. And that was one of the reasons I, you know, I was a big supporter of the PRO Act. And unfortunately, it's not going to happen with this House of Representatives right now, but that's why it's important. We need a Democratic majority in the House.
Yeah.
We can push this bill. Hopefully with the Democratic Senate, you know, we can get it through both houses and get it passed into law, right? To give workers the ability to organize and to ensure that they can collective bargain and fight for what's right and fight for wages and fight for, and it's not all about wages, right? But healthcare.
Sure, yeah.
And like you said, safety, mm-hmm. and making sure that, people aren't having to work under unsafe conditions and that they're being taken care of.
Yeah, simple things that we should have in a democracy.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, no, I've been a big supporter, and my record shows that, and I think that's why I've had a great record of support, 100% rating from the AFL-CIO, and want to be able to continue and fight for our workers and make sure, unions grew and created the middle class.
Yes. Yeah.
And we need them to make sure that they're there to protect the middle class.
Absolutely. No, I could not agree with you more. And, on this topic of unions now, abortions, we saw obviously Joe Biden go, and he was the first active sitting president to, mm-hmm. Join a picket line. Donald Trump did kind of something that was the opposite, which is he went to hold a rally at an auto parts store that only sold non-unionized, mm-hmm. Or parts that were made from non-unionized labor. The Republican Party, obviously, we saw the Dobbs decision. We saw them fumble to be able to elect a speaker, then fire them, then fumble to elect another speaker. What do you think is going on in the Republican Party? It was another prediction that I had during the 2020 election that the Republican Party might very well implode, which, some people say is a bad thing for the way that our nation operates. Other people, say that it could lead to more parties being formed. Do you think that that's a possibility? Do you think that the American people have lost their faith in the Republican Party?
Well, I won't say people lost their faith. I mean, there's still a group, a good sized group of individuals out there that are voting for them and supporting them. But, I think if without gerrymandering, they wouldn't have the numbers that they have. And I think we're kind of seeing that. Yeah. And I think, where is it, in Alabama? Or what state is that the Supreme Court said, hey, you need to redraw the districts?
And I think it was North Carolina.
North Carolina. And they're like, we're not going to do that, which is just crazy. But it kind of tells you, right, what they know is that, without them kind of manipulating it, right? Without them manipulating the districts, without them trying, they know they do better when people don't vote.
Mm.
These are the things that they're trying to prevent and trying to stop. California, very democratic. We have opened up the opportunity to vote. Everybody gets a mail, is going to get a ballot in the mail. You can choose to mail it back in. You can go drop it off at the on election day, you can go drop it off in a box like before election day. You can show up and go vote in person if you want. You have all these options to vote. And then you got states like Texas and Florida where they're just trying to restrict it.
Yeah, and it was harder. Alabama. You were correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're trying to make it harder for them to vote.
Yep.
But they're doing that for a reason. Mm-hmm. Because like you said, right, if more people show up to vote, they don't do as well.
Yeah,
and I think you saw that in the 2018 elections, where turnout was at a record high. People came out, and the Democrats would be able to take back the majority in the House that year. And then it kind of went back down right after the last election here, the last midterm election, which was not good for Democrats. They lost a lot of seats, and so these are things that we need to kind of make sure that we support people to vote, we make it easier for people to vote. I think what you're seeing with the Republican Party really is just, I don't know if it's going to be torn apart, but there's definitely two distinct groups in there that are finding it hard to kind of come together. And I think they kind of, what happened with the new speaker right now that they elected was just a matter of like, hey, we're looking like fools right here. So we got to,
we just got to be
united
and
do it right. But there is definitely, I think, a minority in there that is kind of controlling things and making, forcing decisions and forcing things to happen. And it's putting them in a spot where I don't think, the vast majority of Americans agree with them.
Yeah.
Like again, right? These are you know, guys like Matt Gaetz and, you know, the Speaker Johnson here and, you know, Jim Jordan. These are individuals who are, you know, hardcore to the right. Mm. You know, they don't want to, they don't believe in a woman's right to choose. They don't believe in common sense gun legislation. They don't want to support workers. And they don't want to support the environment.
Yeah.
And it's becoming, you know, less and less people are thinking like that. And so it's a matter. And really guys like that, like, you know, guys like Jim Jordan, Matt Gaetz, they don't want to govern. They don't know how to govern. And what you saw, like, they are happier to be in a spot where they can just cause,
yeah,
you know, chaos.
And get on TV.
Yeah. But that's not how you run a country. You don't run a country Absolutely. By chaos.
Yeah.
And that's just where some of them just seem to be more likely where they're at and what yeah. they're more comfortable doing. And, you know, to govern, to actually do things and get things done, be damned.
Yeah, no. And I remember now why I was bringing up North Carolina. I don't know if you've been familiar with Representative Jeff Jackson, mm-hmm. who has been really active and brought a huge social media campaign where he's explaining to not only his constituents, but now constituents all over America, the issues that Congress now faces. He is actually being gerrymandered out of his positions, who he's going to be running for attorney general now mm-hmm. In his home state. A couple questions that I had for you here to wrap it up. Is you hear this term a lot, especially when individuals are running for office, this term political outsider. And I don't know if it really even has much meaning anymore, if mm-hmm. it really is like has an objective lining. But if you could define what you think a political outsider is, and would you consider yourself a political outsider?
You know, it was I think everybody likes to think of themselves as a political yeah. outsider, right? Yeah. Even those people who've been serving in Congress for like 20 plus years.
Yeah.
You know, nobody wants to kind of be accused of being the insider,
sure,
right?
Yeah. And
it was kind of funny. I saw a quote, but I read an article about me running, and in the article, right, it mm-hmm. said, like, you know, basically political outsider, now a Washington veteran after I spent my time in the
gotcha.
At the Pentagon. And I thought, really? No, I'm not. That's not me. But, you know, it's... You know, the thing about, right, everybody kind of wants to give this image that, hey, they're connected with their constituents. They're mm-hmm. not the Washington insider here. They're not the one who's kind of knows how to pull the strings in here, yeah. that it's really my district and my constituents are the yeah. most important thing. And that's kind of what, you know, what people want to hear, and that's what it is. But I don't think being an insider, I don't think being that Washington veteran is necessarily a bad thing. Knowing how the government works, knowing how it works, is important. And I think the experience I gained over the last 2 years to kind of see it, not only within the administration, but, you know, on the Hill as well as a member of Congress, has kind of given me, that experience to kind of really see like how we can make things better, how to move legislation, gotcha. how to make it, you know, to make sure that bills are written in the right way by yeah. working, you know, if you are a member of Congress, working with, you know, the departments to make sure that you're getting the legislation right. And so that, you know, all the lawyers are going to see sure, yeah. and read it the same way yeah, so yeah. that when it actually gets passed and signed into law, that it will do what you want it
yeah,
to.
Yeah, there's
do.
No question about what it's meant
right.
to
be. Right. Yeah. And so there is a way, I think, that we can do that. And that's what I want to go back and do. I think I have the experience now, you know, running again for Congress, having served in the administration and having served in Congress, to bring those two aspects together and to make it work and to make it better so that it can serve my constituents better and serve the American people better, so that we can get it right.
Yeah. And this being the final question here, what would you say to the criticism that you don't have a lot of experience in the district that you're now running in the 31st district?
You know, that's a false narrative, I think, that's being pushed by one of my opponents.
Sure.
Look, I left home at 18 years old. I went and I have had an incredible experience. I made this decision that I was going to serve. I served first in uniform. I think everything that I tried to do in life is kind of been like, how can I give back to the community and to my community? you know, obviously the Latino community is very important to me. And even when I got out of the service, I continued to talk to kids about speaking. When we had that good fortune that we had by winning the lottery, we, you know, we committed to helping students, you know, in the San Gabriel Valley where I lived. You know, when I got married to Jackie, right, we moved in that community. We lived in that community. Mm-hmm. I've had an opportunity to live all across the United States. I lived up in, you know, New England. I lived in Georgia in the South. I lived up in the Pacific Northwest. Obviously, living and growing up in Southern California as well. I've spent time in Europe. I've traveled the world.
Sure, yeah.
If people want to kind of see that as a negative, like, hey, you haven't been here in the district because of these things. If they want to see it, I don't see me spending 2 years here living in the D.C. area, serving and working in the Pentagon as me being an outsider, like, in the district. Right? To me, it's added to my resume, and it's only going to make me more valuable going back the community that I live in, that I lived in after I, you know, when I got married to my wife, when we first got married, and really to continue to give back to that area. You know, our first Cisneros scholar came from San Dimas in the 31st district.
There you go.
So to say that I'm not part of that district, to say that, hey, he doesn't belong here, is just a false statement, a false narrative, and we're not going to let that happen.
Yeah, and I think I've had this conversation with other individuals running for office too. And one of the best quotes that that I heard in response to this was James Baldwin says something along the lines that travel is the cure to ignorance, and that they're so, you know, experienced and going to different areas and different places that when they come back to their constituents, they're able to bring these experiences and these nuances and actually serve their community better. And I'm sure that with your past experience, you would be able to say the same.
Like I said, right, I've had experience of living all over across the country, spending time in Europe. You know, I did a Western deployment when I was in the Navy, you know, throughout Asia. And it is an experience, right? And serving in Congress and meeting with world leaders and talking about national security issues while I was at the Pentagon. To me, that's all a plus. Yeah. And if somebody sees that, like, hey, well, you know, well, you were out doing all that, I was actually back here home in the district.
Sure.
I kind of feel sorry for you.
Sure.
Right? That you didn't.
Yeah.
You know, but that's why I've always, whenever I talk to students, whenever they're there, right, get out, you know, home is always going to be home. And, I love California. It is my home. We will always come back to California no matter what happens. And you know, back in California again, right? I've left and I've always come back because it is home. But those experiences that I've had, I've always encouraged students to get out there, you know, get out of your comfort zone, get out of your safety bubble, go and experience something else, go see what it's like to live somewhere else, and do something different. And it's only going to help you grow as an individual and as a person.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that note, one thing that we ask all our guests as a final question is, if you had one message, one saying, one thing, one quote that you could leave to the next generation, to the youth, what would it be?
Oh, so, and I'm going to borrow this quote. Again, big baseball fan, big Dodger fan. Jackie Robinson was not only one of the all-time great baseball players, but I think he was one of the all-time great individuals who kind of really knew the burden that he was taking upon himself, right? And knew that he could not fail, because it probably would not only have said baseball back, but it would have said, like, you know, the integration of the country back as well if he did not succeed. But he has a great quote that I've hung in my office. And, you know, life is only as important as the impact it has on other lives. And I've tried to live by that.
Yeah.
And when I talk to students too, I'm like, you know, how are you going to help, you know, the people behind you, right? How are you going to uplift them? You know, someone's given you an opportunity to go out there and succeed. Now, what are you going to do to help kind of make an impact as well?
Yeah,
you know, on other people's lives.
Absolutely.
So that's just a great quote. And it really is, I think, something that we should all strive to be, right? Is what kind of an impact are we going to have on other individuals and make sure that we are uplifting them.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, thank you so much for the wise words. And if all of the listeners want to stay collected with what Mr. Cisneros here is doing, go to Gill on the Hill com. You can follow the campaign running again for the 31st district in California. Best of luck on the campaign trail. Yes. And to all of our listeners, thank you for tuning in to yet another episode of the Politatine podcast. If you want to stay connected to everything that Politatine is doing and the Ox Institute, be sure to head over to oxinstitute.org. Anything else you want to say to wrap up the show?
Hey, come help us knock on some doors out there in Southern California. We'd love to have you.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much. Goodbye.
Thanks.